good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Legislative Council meeting. Today is November 25th, 2020. It is exactly 11 a.m. Thank you all for being here. I do apologize. I planned for this to be a one-issue meeting, but things get out of hand. We've got four items we need to deal with. I appreciate all of you making time here on the day before Thanksgiving to attend our meeting. So, Jessica Geary, are you online?
Chair Stevens, I am online. It looks like we might be waiting for a few more members to join. It sounds like they are getting patched in right now.
Okay, I don't have any record of that, so just let me know what's going on.
Okay, I will let you know once we have eight members, and then I will cue you to restart the meeting.
Thanks, Jessica.
Yep.
Oh, there we are.
It looks like Senator Gigo just signed on. Representative Edgerton.
All right, Chair Stevens, it sounds like we have some members online.
Okay, if we have enough, then let's go ahead and get started again. Thank you all for spending this time with us the day before Thanksgiving. I apologize, we have a much longer agenda than I had originally thought with one item. Now, as things happen, of course, we have four items to deal with. So, Jessica Geary, if you could call the roll, please.
Senator Begich.
Here, I'm here.
Senator Coghill.
I'm here.
Senate President Giesel.
Here.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Stedman.
Here.
Senator Von Imhoff. Speaker Edgman.
Here.
Representative Foster.
Here.
Representative Delana Johnson.
Here.
Representative Jennifer Johnston.
Here.
Representative Kopp. Representative Thompson.
Here.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Here.
Chair Stevens.
Here.
Okay. We have 11 members present.
11 members present. Fine. Well, thank you so much. So we have enough to do our meeting here. Again, apologize for all these issues, but I think we can move through them fairly reasonably. So I call on Representative Stutes for a motion on our agenda.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Legislative Council approve the agenda as presented.
Thank you. Any objections or additions to that agenda?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Begich.
Yes, I was hoping that we might have a discussion of establishing some certainty for, a topic area to establish some certainty for what legislators and staff can do to plan for coming to Juneau in January. I don't know how quite to word that, but I think we should have a discussion of that toward the end of this meeting, if that's at all possible, perhaps setting up a special group of us to discuss some certainty. People are having trouble making travel plans, having trouble deciding whether staff should or shouldn't go, finding lodging, that kind of thing. So we need to have something definitive in place.
You know, Senator Begich, we have a discussion coming up on the Code of Conduct where we're covering some of those issues. Why don't we just expand that Code of Conduct discussion to include the issues you brought up so people know what to expect when they get to Juneau in January. Is that okay?
Yeah, that would be fine. I withdraw my objection.
Great. Hey. Great. Thank you, Senator Begich. Any further additions to the agenda or concerns? If not, with no objection, the agenda is approved as presented. The first item of business, well, just so you know, we're going to deal with this code of conduct, and then we'll go into the Mat-Su lease, and then finally under an executive session, we're going to deal with the RFP 642 and also an update from Representative Josephson. So let's begin with the code of conduct, and if we could have a motion for Representative Suits.
Certainly. I move that Legislative Council approve the pandemic code of conduct policy.
Thank you, and I will object for purposes of discussion, and just to let you know, we discussed this issue last time at our last meeting. There was not real consensus on it and some concerns about specific issues like approval of travel. So I think we've been working on this and made some changes, and I think hopefully it'll be something that we can support. So I'll ask Jessica to discuss this code of conduct. She's been working harder on it than any of us. Jessica.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Good morning, everyone. For the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director, Legislative Affairs Agency. And at the last Ledge Council meeting, we discussed this policy and, as Chair Stevens said, weren't quite ready to take action on it. And I did work with the chair to make a few changes to this, and I was just going to go through those changes briefly and then answer any questions any of you have. So in the very first section, there was a statement that this policy was mandatory and without exceptions. And so we crossed that out because, as we all know, there's always exceptions. And so to write a policy that right off the bat doesn't allow for that probably doesn't make the most sense. And then we added in a statement about where it says arrive in Juneau with a negative COVID-19 test. We changed that to an approved molecular COVID-19 test. And then there was a statement in there about isolating when you get to Juneau pending results. And I'm not sure isolating was the proper term. It's been changed to the word quarantine, which I think is the most appropriate. And let's see, I think that's pretty much it as far as the changes go. And I don't know if you want me to go into it again in more detail. I know we already discussed this, or if you just want to open it up for questions, I'm happy to go either way.
Yeah, thank you, Jessica. I think let's do it open up for questions. Could you explain that molecular test? I mean, that is a test that is not in every community, I don't think, but we do have it in Juneau. Is that right?
That's correct. We do have it available in Juneau, and that is the standard course for testing. That's the approved health and social services test, and it is the most accurate of the tests. And I'm not an expert, but I do know that some of the other tests, the antigen testing and the antibody testing and those types of things are not recognized as being super accurate, and they're not recommended.
So a question was raised earlier. Resident Foster brought up the issue of what if you? How does it work if you're testing as you come in, before you get to Juneau? Does the legislature pay for that? Have you thought about that at all, Jessica?
Sure. And I think we'll get into that a little bit when we have the discussion later during executive session, but. But part of the idea is that the legislature would pay for whatever testing it's considering required. So that would be testing prior to arrival in Juneau, and then whatever testing protocols developed for the actual period of session. So the idea is that the legislature, if requiring that, would also pay for it.
Well, thanks, Jessica. And I appreciate that comment about when we deal with the RFP under executive session, we'll be going into some of these details as well. And further questions or comments that anybody may have?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Suits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see on that particular item with the approved molecular COVID-19 test or test upon arrival and quarantine pending results, What's the time length for the molecular COVID test to get the results?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, it really is, it kind of depends. Each community has a different wait time. Some of the communities are sending to a testing lab and getting results back in 24 hours. Again, during our RFP discussion, we are discussing rapid tests or a 48-hour maximum turnaround time.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please go ahead.
This is Senator Giesel.
Senator Giesel, yes, please go ahead, Senator Giesel.
Thank you. So first of all, to Representative Foster's question about will the legislature pay for a test procured prior to arrival in Juneau, the state of Alaska is providing COVID testing free of charge to Alaskans. Whether that will still be in place in January, I can't speak to that, but right now it is being provided free of charge. Jessica kind of answered the question already about the molecular tests and the time frame. The Abbott rapid test takes approximately 15 minutes for results, but there are multiple molecular tests which are less expensive, of course, than that and take a bit longer. The molecular testing is the best practices, most reliable way of testing for active disease. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, President Giesel. Maybe we should go to Representative Foster. I was trying to interpret his question, but Representative Foster, does that answer your concerns?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think it mostly does. The one other side shoot question on that would be, in Anchorage, my understanding was that you could get the free test to Alaskans upon arrival at the Anchorage airport. Does that mean that you can also, when you're departing Anchorage to Juneau, you can also get that test down there in the baggage area? I know that's where they're doing that.
Senator Giesel, you're our expert on this. Do you have any comments on that? We're testing in Anchorage. Representative Foster, coming from Nome, traveling through Anchorage to Juneau, can he get tested there in Anchorage?
Right now, Mr. Chairman, right now the state of Alaska is encouraging Alaskans to get a COVID test, whether they have symptoms or not, and the state of Alaska is paying for those tests. I can't speak for certainty. That is the messaging here in Anchorage. I don't know that that is the case in Nome, but I know that Nome right now is having an outbreak, and I suspect the same policy would apply there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Senator Giesel. So I think that answers your question, Representative Foster.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question? This is Rep. Johnson.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's sort of hard to get everyone in the queue here, but sorry if I skipped you early. Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Thank you. So I guess, and maybe we're going to have a more of a discussion on the travel portion, but, I mean, when we talk about having a pretty robust testing before we arrive in Juneau, but is the state going to pay for a test if someone goes home? If someone's going to go home for a weekend, will you end up, you can't hardly follow that same quarantine as if when you arrive. So I guess when we talk about trips out of the Capitol, but we all are talking about trips, just the first trip in, which makes sense what we're doing, but then getting into the second round of whether, people coming and going, I guess I'd like to have a little more of a discussion on that.
Well, that's a very good point. And, we did deal with the travel, and you'll see in the code of conduct it's recommended that folks avoid all non-essential trips out of the capital city. We certainly can't stop that, and people are going to be going home. I'm hoping that the next legislature, however it's organized, will attempt to have as brief a session as we can, whether it's 60 days or 90 days or 75 days or whatever it might be. It'd be nice to have it as short as possible so people may not be traveling home every weekend, though we know some folks will. I'd assume that if you travel home for the weekend, for example, then you come back to Juneau, you'd have to be tested again. But is that your understanding, Jessica?
Chair Stevens, that's correct. That's my understanding.
Okay.
So the testing would be paid for by the legislature or individuals, and then the individual would provide that to the to someone to verify, and then they would have to quarantine until they got the results, I would assume. Well, if it's a rapid test, it wouldn't matter so much, but.
Well, Jessica, I believe once we get to this discussion of the RFP, the plan is that the company who gets that contract will test legislators and staff and the media in the Capitol building. Is that right?
Chair Stevens, that's correct.
So, Representative Johnson, that might all be taken care of and be paid for through the legislative process.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Begich.
Senator Begich.
So would this be the time for me to just sort of more articulately put my suggestion on the table?
Yes, please, go ahead.
So what I'm recommending is that we establish a structure for the planning on convening with a recommended session protocol, which would include, one, the timing and number of staff on site, two, the recommended calendar of activities, whether present or remote, and three, suggested actions, for each office. Again, knowing that we can't bind a future legislature, what we could do is at least provide substantive guidance to that legislature.
Well, thanks, Senator Begich. You're absolutely right. Just so everyone is aware, we cease to exist when the new legislature is formed and when the Legislative Council is appointed. So, all we can do, and I think it's a good point to try to make these recommendations. We can't tell them what they're going to do in the next legislature. But if these plans are in place, it'd be very easy for the next legislature just to assume ours or change them in any way they want or eliminate them entirely. But I think you're right. We need to do the best job we can to make sure that guidance is there. They can choose to follow it or not.
So that's, I don't know if I should put that in the form of a motion that we set up a special work group just to establish this and present it for adoption. But those three components would be the components I'd want to see, and something which would be, again, the number and timing of any staff on site, the recommended calendar of activities, whether remote or in person, and then suggested actions that each office should take.
I think that's a very valid recommendation, and we can establish a work group. We don't necessarily need a motion, but if that is the consensus, we will do that to try to figure out. I think the valid questions are how many folks are going to be in the building. We have heard that the peak in the United States will be January 15th, which unfortunately is just when we, shortly when, about the time we are beginning. And if Alaska follows that or is a little behind that, we may want to have more strict requirements, maybe fewer staff in the building. The only people that really have to be there, are the Secretarial Office and the House and the Senate, as well as legislators. So we might require, depending on what the situation is, we might require everyone else to be working at a distance. So that's probably all right with me. If there's no objection to that, and Senator Begich will do that, we'll put together a work group to. Along with Jessica, to try to figure out what ramifications there are and how the timing will work.
Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Any other comments or questions on this pandemic code of conduct? Again, we have no idea how bad or good things may be when we get to Juneau, but this is a good policy for us to have. As you know, if you look at the last thing, the enforcement, it applies to legislative staff at the discretion of a supervisor or appointing authority. The enforcement is applied to legislators when we left to the members.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Geisel, yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. So you've moved down on the code of conduct. I wanted to comment on section 4, effective date. I have two comments about this section. It says this policy is effective immediately and may be updated or rescinded by Ledge Council Chair without need of additional Ledge Council action in accordance. So my first concern is embodying the updating or rescission of this policy to one person, that being the Chair of Ledge Council. I am just expressing concern about that. I feel that it would be more prudent to have the entire council's wisdom in that decision. The second piece on that effective date goes on in the second half of the sentence. It says, in accordance with guidelines of Ledge Council, CBJ, State of Alaska, and CDC, we are hiring a professional contracting company to come in who are also best practices experts. And I would recommend adding their guidance in here also. That is actually part of our contract with them, their consultation and guidance on these type of policies. So those are just two comments I would make about Section 4 effective date. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Senator Geisel. You know, I have no problem about that at all. I don't know how it wound up in the chair's responsibility solely, and I'd be perfectly comfortable to make that change to have it updated or rescinded by the Legislative Council, and then adding our contractor in at the end of that sentence. Is that acceptable to you, Senator Geisel?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection to us making that friendly amendment to number 4, item 4, the effective date? Any objection to that or further comments on that issue? Jessica, do you have any response to that? Does that cause any difficulty for you?
Chair Stevens, I wouldn't say difficulty. The reason there's the statement in there about in accordance with guidance from is so that if there was some, you know, sweeping change that came down from the CDC or otherwise, that it wouldn't require us to have another Legislative Council meeting to make that change. But aside from that, I take no issue with it. It could lengthen the time a little bit for letting up on some of these restrictions if we're at a time where we're able to do that.
Yeah, I understand your concerns. We can meet pretty quickly, though, I think, Ledge Council, if necessary. Well, thanks for those comments. So any further objection to that friendly amendment? Okay, then we have made that change, and I think that's adequate to do that. Any other comments on the code of conduct policy? Who is that? Any other comments or objections to the code of conduct policy?
Senator Stevens, this is Russell Vedran.
I'm sorry, who is this again?
It's Rep. Edgman.
Edgman, yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I apologize. I missed some of it. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yeah, we hear you fine, Mr. Speaker. Go ahead.
So I missed some of the discussion. Perhaps this was covered a moment ago. But going back to the very top of the document where it reads the Legislative Council Pandemic Code of Policy applies to legislators and legislative staff, the part of the discussion I think I might have missed is applicability to anybody else in the Capitol. Can somebody get me straight on that?
Good question. I'll go back to Jessica if you have any thoughts on it, Jessica.
Through the chair, Speaker Edgman, the idea is that it applies to everyone within the building, but there's, because this is a sort of code of conduct, we can't really require others to follow this code of conduct. So, we technically could insert in the media and members of the executive branch or anyone doing business within the Capitol, but I'm not sure our policy would, I'm not sure it would cover them. So I think that was my only reason why I didn't add that in. We did make the other policies that were passed at the last meeting, the screening policy and the mask policy. Those do apply to the media. So I guess I'm open to changing that if that's the will of the committee. I think it would be easy enough to add in.
Through the chair, I might recommend that might be a change that we consider, even if it's worded such that everybody else in the Capitol is recommended to follow these guidelines, or however that might be phrased. But it seems it would, I think it would be useful, and I would recommend that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that's something we can readily do. To make sure that it does cover everyone. I have spoken with Chief of Staff, the Governor's Chief of Staff, and they are quite supportive of what we're doing here and will comply with the recommendations that we come up with. So, Jessica, can you give me some wording that we could add in on that first sentence?
Absolutely. I am trying to draft it right now.
This is unusual meetings, I know, online like this. Take your time, and let's try to do this correctly and make sure everyone is comfortable with it.
Let's see. I think just simply saying it is the recommendation of legislative council that all media and because there could be invited members of the public, so I think just saying it is a recommendation of legislative council that everyone within the I apologize, but I keep getting my words mixed up. Does anybody have?
That's okay. Take your time, Jessica. So the recommendation that something like the recommendation that everyone entering the building complies with our code of conduct. Can we say that?
Everyone within the confines of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm. Everyone entering the Capitol building will adhere to our pandemic code of conduct.
I
like that.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that works.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay, great. Would you make that change then, Jessica?
Yes, sir.
Any further comments on this pandemic code of conduct? Well, I appreciate everyone's willingness to work on this. It's important to have this behind us. Again, it'll only be in place until we cease to exist, but hopefully it'll be there as a recommendation to the future legislature.
Chair Stevens? Chair Stevens?
Any further comments?
We have Megan Wallace on the line, and perhaps she might have a comment on this subject.
Okay, that's a good idea. Thank you so much, Jessica. Megan Wallace, any thoughts that you care to share with us?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. I apologize. I was trying to speak up, but I think my line was muted. But I just wanted to make a comment that I would encourage the incoming rules chair to potentially make the abeyance of the pandemic code of conduct policy part of their credentialing process when they work with incoming media for the next legislative session. That's another way to enforce this policy as to folks that are not employed by the legislature.
Okay, and Megan, would that be something you think we should include in this code of conduct then?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any harm in adopting the language that you just suggested, but in terms of enforcement, that's just another layer that I would recommend to ensure compliance with credentialed media.
Okay, can you give us some wording and where that would be under enforcement under 5, I assume?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it needs to be in the policy. It would just be something to make sure that maybe our current rules chairs share with their successors to the extent that we have different rules chairs once the next legislature becomes organized.
Okay,
and that
sure,
could be
that
as part of that process.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I'm sure the presiding officers, whoever they may be, and the rules chairs, whoever they may be, will hopefully will go back and pick up on this code of conduct and make sure that everyone complies with it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, Megan. Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Coghill.
Senator Coghill, please go ahead.
Good suggestion, and we are preparing a transition document from this rules chair to the incoming. So we'll make sure that this code of conduct gets included in the suggestion that they do for credentialing.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Any other comments that anyone has on this code of conduct? Then I will remove my objection and ask Jessica to do a roll call, please.
Chair Stevens, should we have Vice Chair Stutes reread the motion to add the language as amended, since we made a couple amendments to this?
Good point. Yeah, would you make that change, Representative Stutes?
I would be happy to do so, Mr. Chairman. I move that Legislative Council approve the pandemic code of conduct policy, including the new language which has been added to this document.
Okay, thank you. And again, then I remove my objection. Thank you for that comment, Jessica. Would you do a roll call, please?
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senate President Giesel.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Speaker Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Delana Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Yes.
Chair Stevens.
Yes.
11 yeas, 0 nays.
Yes, sir. This is Senator Hoffman. I'll vote twice as yes.
Oh, I apologize, Senator Hoffman.
Yeah, and this is Representative Cobb.
This is Senator Von Imhoff.
Yeah, and Representative Cobb votes yes as well.
And Senator Von Imhoff?
That is correct. I vote yes, please. Thank you.
Okay, 14 yeas, 0 nays.
Okay, thank you all, and thanks for those of you who are now with us, and thanks for doing that. Okay, let's move on to the second issue on our agenda, and that's the Mat-Su LIO lease subordination agreement. And Representative Stutes, for a motion, please.
Certainly. I move that Legislative Council approve assignment of the lease for Mat-Su office space from Wasilla Station, LLC to 600 East Railroad Avenue, LLC, and further move that Legislative Council approve the subordination agreement between 600 East Railroad Avenue, LLC, Northrum Bank, and the Legislative Affairs Agency for the duration of the lease.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. I'll object for purposes of discussion and call on J.C. Kessel. He is our procurement officer. Give us an explanation and try to answer any questions that we may have. We also have Emily Naumoff with us, Emily Naumann with us for any legal questions. She's online as well, I believe, right now. So. J.C. Kessel, if you could help us understand this Mat-Su lease.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. My name is J.C. Kessel. I'm the procurement officer for the Legislative Affairs Agency, for the record. The legislature's Mat-Su office space located in Wasilla has been purchased by 600 East Railroad Avenue, LLC, owned by Dr. Tony Nimmi. The office space is currently occupied by the Mat-Su delegation and the Mat-Su legislator delegation and the Mat-Su Legislative Information Office. Our procurement procedures require that a legislative lease assignment with a subordination agreement be considered and approved by a majority of the members of Legislative Council. LLA requests Legislative Council's approval to proceed with the lease assignment and consent with the subordination agreement for the existing Matsu lease agreement from Wasilla Station LLC to 600 East Railroad Avenue for the duration of the lease. Once approved, all obligations under the original lease agreement would be transferred to 600 East Railroad Avenue LLC. The subordination agreement would exist between 600 Railroad Avenue LLC, North Rim Bank, and the Legislative Affairs Agency. If the lease assignment and consent is not approved by the council, a new RFP will have to be issued for Matsu office space. I have included a copy of the draft subordination agreement for members to review, and I'm available to answer any questions about the lease assignment and consent.
Oh, thank you, JC. I appreciate that. I know it's a complicated issue, changing ownerships of that building. I don't believe there's, I've not heard any objections to that building, to that contract, to that lease that we have. Anyone in the from Matsu who are in those offices, and I believe they are Senators Hughes, Wilson, Schauer, Representatives Now, Newman, Tilton, Sullivan, Leonard, Johnson, Eastman, Rauscher, and also the Matsu LIO. Do any of you have any comments on that contract and how it's working right now? Apparently there's no objection at all. So, yes, go
no,
ahead.
I should have looked a little closer at that, but I don't have any objections to. I mean, I don't have any objections to it. My understanding was that the Matsu Central School was going to purchase the building, but I'm not sure if that's what happened. So I'm a little bit behind on this one, but so far everything else has been okay.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Can you help us out there? Help us understand that the purchase, you indicated, JC, that it was actually Dr. Tony Nima in that area. Is that right, who purchased it? JC?
Chair Stevens, yes, that is correct. When I first took over as procurement officer for the Legislative Affairs Agency, there was some news that the Wasilla or Matsu School District was trying to purchase that building, if I believe correctly, but it was unable to obtain it.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you, JC. Any further questions or comments on the Matsu office space? And no legal issues. Emily Nauman, are you with us?
Senator Stevens, yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Emily. You have any comments on this, any concerns about the lease changes?
No.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. Well, then, if there's no further comments, I'll remove my objection. Jessica, would you do a roll call, please?
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
No. Yes.
Senate President Giesel.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Yes.
Speaker Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Delina Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stutz.
Yes.
Chair Stevens.
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you all very much. That motion passes 14-0. The next issue is our executive session. I know it's a little difficult when we're all online like this, but we're going to discuss the RFP 642, and also we'll receive an update by Representative Josephson on the Department of Law spending on the Janus slot lawsuit. And Representative Stutz, could we have a motion for...
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I move that Legislative Council go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B1 and 3, discussion of matters, the immediate knowledge of which would adversely affect the finances of a government unit, and discussion of a matter that may, by law, be required to be confidential. The following individuals can remain online: Jessica Gary, J.C. Kestel, Megan Wallace, Emily Newman, and any legislators not on Ledge Council and any staff of Ledge Council members.
Well, thank you for that motion, Representative Stutz. A little complicated here now. We'll go ahead and arrange this executive session, and when we hear from Jessica that we are ready, we'll continue with the agenda then. If you'd all hang on for a few seconds.
Senator Begich.
Here.
Senator Coghill.
Here.
Senate sure President there. Giesel.
There are
here.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Stedman.
Here.
Senator Von Imhoff. Speaker Edgman.
Here.
Representative Foster. Representative Delina Johnson. Representative Johnston.
Here.
Representative Kopp.
Here.
Representative Thompson.
Here.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Here.
Chair Stevens.
Here.
I'm going to try Senator Hoffman.
Here.
Okay. Senator Von Imhoff? Representative Foster? Representative Johnson? We have 11 members present.
Great. Thank you very much, Jessica. So we're going to deal now back in session with the RFP, but also with the motion on a Janus issue. So we have a quorum ready to go back, and Representative Stutes, if we could have a motion on the RFP.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I move that Legislative Council approve the contract award of RFP 642 to Beacon Occupational Health and Safety Services for a total not to exceed $1.5 million.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion and ask JC to give us an explanation for the record.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. And for the record, my name is JC Kestel, Procurement Officer for the Legislative Affairs Agency and the Procurement Manager for RFP 642. At the request of legislative leadership, the Legislative Affairs Agency issued our request for proposal 642 on October 30th, 2020 to solicit proposals for contractors to provide COVID-19 related safety services at the Capitol. RFP 642 closed November 9th, 2020, and two proposals were received, one from Capstone Clinics and two from Beacon Occupational Health and Safety Services. The agency has estimated the expenses for the contract resulting from RFP 642 may total $1.5 million for the upcoming legislative session. The PEC had recommended the award of the contract to Beacon Occupational Health and Safety Services that they were considered most advantageous to the agency. The agency is requesting Legislative Council to approve the contract for RFP 642 to Beacon Occupational Health and Safety Services for a total not to exceed $1.5 million. Thank you, Chair Stevens.
Thank you, JC, appreciate that. And also, again, want to thank those who are on that proposal evaluation committee for all the work they put into it. You have before you a motion to award this RFP. Is there any discussion at this time? Very well, and I will remove my objection and ask Jessica if you'd do a roll call, please.
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senate President Giesel.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff. Speaker Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster. Representative Johnson. Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Yes.
Chair Stevens.
Yes.
11 yeas, 0 nays.
Well, thank you. The motion passes by 11 votes. We will move on to the next issue that we have discussed, and Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Leg Council write a letter to the governor in regard to state spending related to the Janus lawsuit.
Thank you. And I will I will object for purposes of discussion and open this up to any discussion. Any comments that anyone care to make at this time? Maybe Megan Wallace, would you have some thoughts on that letter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. As agreed by the council, I will work to draft a letter to be sent to the governor on these issues that hopefully we can get some resolution on to the council's satisfaction.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, Senator Begich.
Yes, I would like to just make it a point for the record, for the public record, that it is critical for us to continue to work to ensure that there are three co-equal branches of government in this state and that each of those branches respects the will and authority of the others, and that this action, this letter, provides us an opportunity to reinforce the incredibly important appropriation role of the legislature in a way that is non-prescriptive but is certainly descriptive of our power. And with that, I just wanted to be sure that that was on the record, that it is important that all three branches be treated equally and that this letter is our effort to ensure that our branch continues to be treated as a co-equal branch of government.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Representative Josephson, I certainly appreciate your bringing this issue to the Legislative Council and for your work on this in the past. Do you have any comments or thoughts you'd care to share with us at this time?
Well, yes, just that I'm very proud to be a legislator today and very grateful and proud of your membership.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any further comments anyone cares to make at this point?
Yeah, this Chairman is Brett Thompson.
I'm sorry, a couple of voices. I didn't hear them. Try again.
I think it was Coghill.
Wait, please, go ahead.
Who's that?
I think it was Coghill.
Is that you, Senator Coghill?
Yes, Senator
okay,
Coghill.
Please go ahead.
So I appreciate the motion, but it highlights just the Janus issue instead of the authority issue. Should we make the motion with regard to legislative appropriation authority?
I think we will do that. Was the intention, certainly. So I think we can do that and include that as well.
Thank you. This is Representative Thompson.
Representative Thompson, please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the question. Once the draft is put together, are we going to have it sent to us so we can take a look at it before it's mailed to the governor?
Yeah, that's a very good idea. We will do that.
Thank you.
So before we send it out, we'll send a draft of the letter to members of the Legislative Council. Any further comments? Then I will remove my objection and ask Jessica to take a roll call.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Was the motion going to be amended?
Yes, you brought the question exactly that was asked just by Representative Stutes right now. So maybe, are you ready for an amendment?
I am ready.
Okay, I'd ask for an amendment, Representative Stutes.
So I would say I move Legislative Council write a letter to the governor in regard to state spending related to the Janus lawsuit and their authority to do so. Is that what you wanted, Senator Coghill, and their authority?
Yeah, I think
that's
fine. Okay, thank you, Senator Collins. That will work.
Okay.
That sounds good. So we have an amendment before us. So let's vote on that amendment before we go to the main motion. Could we have a roll call, please, on the amendment?
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senate President Giesel.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff. Speaker Edgman. Sorry, Speaker Edgman, was that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Foster. Representative Johnson. Representative Johnston. Representative Kopp.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Yes.
Chair Stevens.
Yes.
That was nine yeas, zero nays.
The motion passes with nine yeas. That's the amendment to the motion. So we have before us the amended motion. Maybe you could read that again, Representative Stutes, just so everyone knows what they're voting on.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I move Ledge Council write a letter to the governor in regard to state spending related to the Janus case and their authority to be doing so.
Okay, so that's the motion as amended. Any discussion on that? Then how about a roll call vote, Jessica, on that motion?
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senate President Giesel.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff. Speaker Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster. Representative Johnson. Representative Johnston.
Yes, and I'm yes on the other one. I got disconnected.
Okay. Thank you for that. Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stutes.
Yes.
Chair Stevens.
Yes.
So that's 11 yeas, zero nays.
Well, thank you. By 11 and A's, and in addition, the amendment had 10 yeas, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, well, thanks so much for everyone on the day before Thanksgiving being with us. A much bigger agenda than I had hoped for, and I wish you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.